Here, Your Majesty, we have an infant phenomenon. A remarkable child of 10. He's quite a historian, editor of our school magazine.
Very interesting.
This, Your Majesty, is Rupert, our young editor.
How do you do, Rupert?
You.
Sit down. And what's that you're reading?
Karl Marx.
Surely you're not a communist.
Do I have to be a communist to read Karl Marx?
Rupert.
That's a valid answer. Well, if you're not a communist, what are you?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I dislike all forms of government.
But somebody must rule.
And I don't like the word rule.
Well, if we don't like the word rule, let's call it leadership.
Leadership in government is political power, and political power is an official form of antagonizing the people.
What magazine did you say he edits?
A commentary on current events.
Pardon me.
My dear young man, politics are
necessary.
Politics are rules imposed upon the people.
In this country, rules are not imposed. They are the wish of all free citizens.
Travel around a bit, then you'll see how free they are.
Yes, but you didn't let me finish.
They have every man in a straitjacket, and without a passport, he can't move a toe.
But if you'll allow me to...
In a free world, they violate the natural rights of every citizen.
But you don't let me...
They have become the weapons of political despots.
Yes, but may
I... And if you don't think as they think, you're deprived of your passport.
Will you allow me
to... leave a country is like breaking out of jail.
Yes,
and
but...
to enter a country is like going through the eye of a needle.
But
am I free to travel?
Of course you're free to travel.
Only with a passport.
Will you allow me to say
something? Only with a passport. Do animals need passports?
Have you finished?
It's incongruous that in this atomic age of speed, we are shut in and shut off by passports.
If you'll shut up and let somebody else talk...
And free speech, does that exist?
No, you've got it all.
And free enterprise.
We were talking of passports.
Today, it's all monopoly.
All right. Now, will you...
Can I go into the automobile business and compete with the other trucks?
If I can get in a word...
Not a chance. Can I go into the grocery business and compete with the chain stores?
Will you shut up?
Not a chance. Monopoly is the menace of free enterprise. As I look back 60 years ago...
Where were you 60 years ago?
He was a glint in his great-grandfather's eye.
Very well now. Have you finished? Now let me say something. Let me tell you how wrong you are. In the first place... In the first place... Now I've forgotten what I wanted to say.
And the atomic bomb.
Ah.
It's a crime... That when the world cries for atomic energy,
Bravo. You
want to make atomic bombs.
Me? I'm against atomic bombs.
You want to wipe out civilization. Destroy all life on this planet.
You don't think you're living in the 90s.
I lost my throat because I didn't want atomic bombs.
You and your kind think that atomic bombs can solve your problem.
Listen, you little rat.
Today, man has too much power. The Roman Empire collapsed with the assassination of Caesar. And why? Because of too much power. Feudalism blew up with the French Revolution. And why?
Right.
Because of too much power. And today, the whole world will blow up. And why?
Because of too much power.
The monopoly of power is a menace to freedom. It degrades and victimizes every individual.
And where is the individual?
I don't know.
Lost in terror because he's made to hate instead of love. If civilization is to survive, we must combat power until the dignity and peace of man are restored.
What's the meaning of this?
Well, that's from a movie entitled The Anarchist Kid, which Charlie Chaplin was in that movie. He's the one talking to the kid. Of course, Charlie Chaplin was a leftist, some would say even a Marxist, but I certainly agree with much of what he said, and I agree with almost everything the kid said, and I think that he's closer to the mark than most people. Political parties, that's for sure. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a rainy, rainy day, which is good for the crops. I'm going to plant a bunch of flowers, flower seeds, as soon as it stops raining. And I want to have a real pretty flowery place around here.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, this is the 30th of March. How about that? Boy, this one's over. It's almost over. And this is Terrible Tommy in the bunker, in the different bunker. Yeah. And Lone Wolf Radio. A little late today, we had a couple of workmen in here doing some things and getting the internet going right and a couple of other things, so a little later today. And being way out here on the West Coast, it makes it real later for you guys back east. So let's get right to it here. We got something from Liberty Bell back in May 1988 by Reverend P. Oliver. The Christian Nazis. As everyone knows, Nazis are the lowly Aryans, so wicked that they do not worship Yahweh's yammering Yids or appreciate the honor of being robbed and humiliated by those godly superhumans. They're also called fascists and anti-Semites and many other things by the prostitutes who write in the Jews' lie papers or yabber about the Jews' hypnologic picture machines. Most Western states have had organizations that wanted their nations to become independent, in fact, as well as his name, but a few of them attained such success that they could influence their nation's destiny. In Italy, the fascists rescued the kingdom from democratic corruption. In Germany, the National Socialists freed the nation from Jewish parasitism and by great heroism almost ensured the survival of our race. In Spain, the Falange prepared the victory of General Franco and civilized Spaniards. And in Romania, the Iron Guard defended white men against their predators and for a time almost had their irresponsible and venal king under control. The Romanian organization differed fundamentally from the other three. Mussolini effected what diplomats call modus vivendi with the Vatican, but his eyes were on the nobler civilization of ancient Rome. Before it was corrupted by Oriental superstitions and destroyed by mongrelization. In Germany, Hitler gave a generous tolerance to the Christian sects and did not offend them, for which their leaders showed their appreciation by conspiring against him. But his movement represented the nobler ethos of the Nordics before they were poisoned by the alien religion. Although the Falange delivered the church in Spain from horrors of communist rule, its members were, for the most part, atheists and agnostics, with a few deists of one kind or another. But Codenroe's Iron Guard was specifically Christian in its basic premise and organization, and indeed could accept no recruits or ally itself with leaders who were not Christian. There is a significant corollary, as Warren B. Heath pointed out in his introduction to D. Macu's Anti-Humans. The religious differences prevented cooperation between the Iron Guard and Professor A.C. Kuza's Christian Defense League, although both had the same primary objective, the liberation of Romania from domination and exploitation by its vociferous and insatiable parasites. In the name of Kuza's organization, Christian was probably used ambiguously to mean non-Jewish. The organization's leaders and publications were rationalistic. According to Heath, Professor Kuza's creed was the elegant skepticism of Renan. Professor Ingora, historical works treat Christianity with cold objectivity. And Octavian Goga seemed to have held at heart a view of Christianity similar to that set forth in Nietzsche's famous Genealogy of Morals. The Christian Defense League enlisted a considerable number of well-educated men, probably the elite of Romania's limited class of intellectuals. I use that word in its correct meaning, not as American jabberwockies aggregate it to themselves, so-called intellectuals. But I believe that all who have studied closely the history of Romania between 23 and 45 agree that the Christian Defense League never had the slightest chance of attaining such political power that it could sensibly influence the destiny of Romania. Cudrow, with a specifically Christian organization that also called itself the Legion of St. Michael, the Archangel, and Menet, almost attained in Romania the position held by Mussolini in Italy and by Hitler in Germany. It can be reasonably argued that he would have succeeded had he not had to face the obstacle they did not have to surmount, a stupid and venal king. The Iron Guard and the career of Corneliu Zila Codrou deserved the closest study by all who are interested in the dynamics of politics. They will bear in mind, of course, that Romania differed profoundly in culture and population from the United States. It was not so far gone down the road of perdition. They will also try to measure the force that what is now called charisma. The effect of the leader's character and personality is distinct from his policies and programs. The force of charisma, is shown by the devotion he inspired. Time has not withered it. 45 years and more after he was murdered, 40 years after his country was seized by the Soviet arm of the Judeo-Communists, who triumphant in 45, the loyal survivors of the Iron Guard are working to ensure the preservation of historical record by having the essential documents translated into the major languages of Europe. Cudrow, his own candid account of his career, has been published in French, German, Italian, and Spanish. The English translation for my Legionnaires was published in 1976 by Editura Libertà in Madrid. This was followed in what is to be a series by Nest Leaders Manual in Madrid. Organizations for political action designated their local units as cells, chapters, priorities, commanderies, and so on. Cudrow selected for the primary units of the Legion the term nest, regarding it as a school from which would come disciplined and resolute young men, prepared to fight to liberate their country from the alien parasites who were devouring it. He was doubtless influenced by the French use of the nid in much the same sense. This edition, published by Editura Libertati, is the only authorized edition in English. I am asked to make it clear that a truncated and mutilated printing of this translation in England with the title Legion was unauthorized and in many places incorrect and misleading. The book opens with a long introduction by C. Parpanis, who quotes and appraises European opinion of the legendary movement in Romania, noting its difference from the comparable movements elsewhere, and finally describes the murder of Cudrow and 13 of his closest associates by the Romanian police on the orders of the infamous King Carol, transmitted by his prime minister. The other emphasizes one instructive detail which will astonish only naive readers. Although Cudrow's Iron Guard was informed by Christian religiosity, which reached mysticism, the prime minister who plotted the murders, and with Carroll's consent, seized Coudenhove and his comrades, taking them by surprise on Palm Sunday, imprisoned them under conditions that amounted to torture, and finally ordered the police to kill them by the Jewish rite of strangulation, was Miron Cristea, the patriarch of the Orthodox Church in Romania, the supreme ruler of that church and the most venerated and presumably holiest of the holy men in the country. No man can rise very high in the Jesus business if he is not immune to religiosity. After the murders, bullets were fired through the corpses to lend some semblance to the official story that the victims had been shot while trying to escape. Mr. Papanas quotes the confession of the commander of the police who superintended the murders. The confession of one of the gendarmes is quoted in an appendix to For My Legionnaires. The political activists should note that although the police were reluctant to commit the crime, they obeyed orders. That will be the attitude of police everywhere. The manual is Coudenhove's instructions and directives to leaders of each local unit of his organization. The reader will note the insistence on Christian faith and the efficacy of prayer, on the discipline of plain living without self-indulgence amounting to what some would call asceticism, and constant emphasis on spiritual rebirth of the nation through the example set by the legionnaires' integrity and devotion. The leaders of all patriotic endeavors, however, will be most of all impressed by Coudenhove's eminently practical judgment in arranging all the details of organization, even the most minute, that they will admire the prudence of his measures to avert internal dissension, the harm that may be caused by dunder-headed sympathizers and penetration by agents of the enemy. And Americans with experience in the harassing business of trying to form and maintain a cadre of loyal followers will wonder where they are to look in this country for recruits of moral caliber of the Iron Guard. When Yahweh's master race began to prepare the Aryan boobs in the United States for eventual use as a horde of crazed cattle stampeded into Europe to consummate the suicide of the West, and in all probability the suicide of our race, the world destroyers hired the prostitutes of the press to propagate lies about Adolf Hitler. It took the hostess generous, Humani, years to invent the hula hoops they now use to plunder and cow their serfs. But from the first, they forged documents to show that Hitler had been the illegitimate offspring of a kike by mistranslating a German idiom that designates a man who habitually walks about while talking to intimates of serious matters. They were able to concoct a silly story that he often fell into such rages that he chewed the carpet. They told persons who could not read German that Hitler had evacuated or advocated in his great work, Mein Kampf, the technique of the big lie, which they're accurately identified as the standard technique of the Jews, has now witnessed their Holocaust, which may be the most enormous lie perpetrated since their tale about Esther in the Jew book, and among many lesser applications of their racial technique, they devised the story that Hitler had been a house painter. It is now admitted, of course, that he was an artist of sincere purpose and some minor distinction, although not, of course, an artist to be ranked with the masters of the great tradition, which ran from Leonardo and Michelangelo to recent times, when the Jews applying their standard method first defile, then destroy, hired venal critics to bamboozle simpletons into accepting as modern art ugly and disgusting daubs made by schizophrenics and by swindlers who imitate them. It is now possible to inspect conveniently the paintings, including watercolors, drawings, and other work of Hitler. As a young artist who was interested in satisfying his own aesthetic instincts and had no fixed intention of becoming a professional in the arts, in which he knew he could not greatly excel, an impressive illustrated catalog of 260 pages with the reproductions of all the quite numerous works in color and black and white, including even rough sketches made when he was the incarnate soul of a great nation, and as complete as the author and compiler could make it, is Billy F. Price Adolf Hitler, the unknown artist. This handsome volume of quarto size, well printed in Italy, was published in Houston, Texas by the author in 1983, with a text in German, and in 1984 from an English text. The English volume may now be obtained from the Eichler Publishing Corporation, 4115 Leeshire Drive, Houston, Texas, as a reproduced picture, price of reproducted price of $20 each, though that was way back. A friend of mine has shown this copy to many casual acquaintances and reports that it was unexpectedly effective in making Americans aware of how much Yiddish excrement has been smeared over the faces of for the past 50 years. At all events, you will learn from the volume that while the great champion of our race was not a great artist, he was in fact, as in his ultimate political purpose, an honest man, and we may hope that he will be remembered as such by the descendants of the nation that defeated him and destroyed him, and that memory of him may even give to those descendants some strength to endure the degradation and wretchedness to which, as they will discover before long, they have been condemned by their thoughtless parents. Now I want to talk about one of the most fraudulent presidents the country's ever had, Ronald Reagan. I never backed Ronald Reagan except in the very beginning when I worked in his campaign office for governor of California, at which time he said that if he would have had to use armed troops to integrate the schools in California with blacks, he would have. He raised taxes higher than any other governor. So I knew a lot of guys that worked with him in Hollywood that said he was a complete fraud and a bumbling boob. And so I had the picture of Ronald Reagan early on. All the KKK were all for Ronald Reagan. And I'm sure all the so-called National Socialists were all for Ronald Reagan, or most of them. They were very upset with me because I would not support Ronald Reagan. Now they've got airports and highways and bridges and everything else named after this bastard. Incidentally, he never went to Auschwitz. He claimed he went to Auschwitz. He never left the United States. In fact, he pretty much never left Hollywood during the whole war. In writing about the man we know as Ronald Wilson Reagan, who holds the highest office in the land, the establishment press has just about convinced the public that he is an arch-conservative and a tax cutter. He is neither. During Ronald Reagan's two terms, taxes have gone up, not down. He is now and always has been a bleeding heart liberal of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt variety, except for the war criminals who have run Israel since 1948, old FDR is the man Ronald Reagan professes to admire most of all. Despite Mr. Reagan's talk about cutting down on government waste, sounds like somebody familiar, somebody now. And overspending the budget, he has done just the opposite. They always do, don't they? So instead of being deceived by political talk from the White House, why don't we simply examine the facts? It took the combined federal, state, and local governments 155 years from the founding of our republic in 1789 to 1944 to spend $100 billion. Compare this to Ronald Reagan's administration, which in only 7 years so enormously increased the national expenditure that it accumulated indebtedness of nearly $3 trillion. Yet hardline conservatives still try to pass Mr. Reagan off as anything but a free and reckless spender of our money. Another phony conservative. While federal revenues increased by $35 billion since 1981, a rate of increase more than four times that rate of inflation, excess spending during the Reagan administration soared by more than $150 billion during that same period. Mr. Reagan has not made any attempt to call for a balanced budget for any years since he has been in the White House. In 1982, the first budget for which he was responsible, the deficit was calculated at $40 billion. However, with all the extra expenditures Reagan added, it turned out to be $127 billion. Of course, that seems like nothing nowadays. What, 20, 30 trillion? A far cry from the projected $40 billion, wouldn't you say? The next year, he even increased his spending for such corrupting items as more welfare payments and proposed to have a political spree by spending $91 billion, $500 million more than even the revenue from opposite oppressive taxation. But the revenue is always with irresponsible spenders, proved insufficient for Mr. Reagan. The deficit turned out to be $207 billion, $800 million, and more than $116 billion, more than he claimed to be accurate projection when he foisted the economic insanity on a thoughtless public. Unless you ponder the figures, you don't even glimpse the true situation. Mr. Reagan has spent more than all the previous administrations combined. If our debt reaches $3 trillion this year, as it is certainly will under Mr. Reagan, then I calculated that to pay this off at the rate of $1 a second would require 900 years. That figure I reached using my own arithmetic. When I showed this to an expert with figures, the professor said I had erred. He quickly figured it out to be 63,000 years. That will give you some idea of Mr. Reagan's expenditures. And obviously the debt will never be paid, as is the debt we have today will never be paid. Mr. David Stockman, a pretty smart fellow, was Mr. Reagan's budget director until he resigned because he couldn't stand the stench of Mr. Reagan's Roosevelt-type wild spending. He has charged the Reagan administration with both deception and self-deception in spending. Here are his words, quote, "After 4 years on the job, I had to conclude that what comes out of the White House typewriter is all hot air and bullshit." It is an important fact that Mr. Stockman laid on the line. He was the first person with inside knowledge of the facts to expose the Reagan administration by saying under Mr. Reagan, the government spends twice as much each month as it takes in. But according to the president and his public relations gang, he was not to blame. They just blamed the newspapers for printing what Stockman revealed. Mr. Stockman wrote a book about Mr. Reagan, Revolution, and how it failed. Here is a telling excerpt from that book. Quote, after 40 years of loyal opposition to the ever-growing size of the federal budget, after four decades of railing against an enormous government intruding into the lives of its citizens, the Republican Party suddenly, in 1980, found itself with a genuine conservative in the White House and in possession of the power to effect a total change in American history. Quote, as it turned out, the arch-conservative presided over an economic shell game resulting in unprecedented deficit spending. Representative Morris Udall, a Democrat of Arizona, said it took 39 presidents, two expensive world wars, and 200 years and all manner of difficulties to slowly create a huge national debt. It took Mr. Reagan only 5 years of unheard-of wild spending to double it, and before he leaves, he'll more than triple it. Trillions of wasted money, yet people still can't believe that he's a wild-eyed spender. They won't even believe it, even when, in plain fact, it's true. You see, boys and girls, you hear these new Republicans nowadays. They all say how wonderful Ronald Reagan was, what a wonderful conservative he was. He was no conservative. In fact, he was a war criminal for his operations in Central America against Nicaragua. And all the boys that worked with him, like Oliver North, should be in federal prison. But no, he's got a TV show talking about warfare and so forth. That's the way it goes. I agree with both Mr. Stockman and Mr. Udall, but most Americans still refuse to admit the facts. Well, they do today. They still worship Ronald Reagan. Allow me to give an example of Mr. Reagan's determination to spend more of our tax dollars on social programs than any other president. Exactly the opposite of the reasons you voted for him twice. Consider his liberal programs that were supposed to provide jobs for people who found themselves unemployed during the nationwide economic slowdown. Sound familiar? He urged Congress to spend an additional $9 billion via the Emergency Jobs Appropriation Act of 1983. 15 months later, the General Accounting Office found that the program had an effective cost of $88,571 for each person enrolled, enough to send every one of those students through both undergraduate and graduate school at Harvard, and still have money left over. Is this economical? Is this conservative? Well, they did a lot of that shit, you know. Johnson. Johnson, in his war on poverty, spent enough money on the blacks they could have sent every black kid in the United States to 4 years of Harvard University. But they didn't get it, did they? The money was spent, but they didn't get it. They didn't get very much of it. Despite all the clear evidence against them, Mr. Reagan's Teflon coating is not wearing thin. For 7 years, he has managed to come up out of a myriad of potentially damaging setbacks without any lasting damage to either his record of accomplishments or his credibility. There'll never be another one like him. And of course the Jews loved him. Yeah, they did. Like water off a duck's back, domestic and foreign policy failures seem to roll off the great communicator's impenetrable exterior without the slightest hint of a discouraging word. There is never a cloudy day for such a popular president. consider some of his failures while espousing reduction in big government. The federal bureaucracy under Mr. Reagan actually has grown from 2,840,000 federal employees in 1981 to 2,980,000 in January of 1986, and will be over 3 million by the end of 1988. You see any difference between these and the progressive liberals? There's no difference between these people. Just surface crap that they argue about. Despite an increasing campaign against deficit spending, Mr. Reagan now presides over a $2 trillion budget, still $150 billion short of balancing. Several top-level aides have resigned rather than engage in any more of Mr. Reagan's free-spending tactics. I should like to remind everyone that when Mr. Reagan became president, he vowed to clean up waste, fraud, and abuse throughout the federal government. Those were his very own words, not mine. Now, 7 years later, more billions of our tax money have been wasted than under any previous administration. This is quite a long article. I'm not going to get it all done this time or today. It's thoroughly, let's see some of the things he did. He ordered the CIA to mine the harbors of Nicaragua and professed hypocritical concern for anti-communists in that country to mask their covert supply of arms to Iran for the purpose of starting a war to destroy the Arabian nations for the profit of Israel. His administration has, under the cover of some futile pretenses, abetted the massive invasion of the United States by mestizos from Mexico, who now openly speak of the time when they will retake the Southwest and rid them of vile gringos. He deliberately lied to other nations, urging them not to send arms to Iran at the very time he was doing precisely that. He secretly plotted and attempted the assassination of heads of two Muslim states, Iraq and Libya, with which the United States has not the slightest quarrel. He did so as a hitman for the Israelis, and the exposure of his attempts at murder have been covered him and the United States with him with merited disgrace and ridicule. He personally conducted a vile campaign of disinformation and misinformation, which was too much for even our news media to stomach without protest, to bring down the government of Libya to please the would-be masters of the world. He personally ordered a sneaking terrorist attack on Libya as an act of war and unjustifiable aggression on the orders of his Zionist masters. By this and many similar acts, the United States has now made itself reviled as the great terrorist power by the civilized nations from whom these acts could not be concealed, as they were seditiously concealed from the Americans by the captive press and covered by Reagan's hypocritical mouthings about terrorism. He has done everything possible to afflict all mankind with the inherent evil of the most vicious and inhuman power that ever appeared on earth, world Zionism. He procured the adoption of the treasonable genocide treaty, with even the worst of preceding regimes dared not enact, an anti-American measure which, under much pretentious gabble, is intended eventually to make it a criminal and perhaps capital offense to displease a Jew. He sanctioned the pseudo-legal kidnapping of American citizens who were carried captive to be murdered by the Soviets or harassed in obscene show trials to amuse Jews in Israel. He established the infamous OSI as an extension of the terrorist arm of Mossad, the Zionist espionage and murder agency, to persecute American citizens selected by the world's most barbarous nation for revenge or just for fun. He sanctioned and perhaps ordered the revival of the incredible law about sedition, by which the nation's first crypto-communist presidents sought prematurely to establish himself as America's Lenin, a law which has applied in the infamous sedition trial in 1944, held that persons who have never even heard of one another are guilty of conspiracy if they send letters that mention a given subject to addresses within a given state or territory. The law is now being applied to cow Americans who do not know that America is a thing of the past. After much pratting about Star Wars to make alien scientists in the United States concerned lest the American serfs are able to defend themselves against the Soviets, he and his counterparts of the other end of the Washington-Moscow axis, with many chuckle, negotiated an arms control treaty that effectively disarmed the United States and precludes American intervention in Europe. The list could be extended indefinitely. It will, however, serve to show first for what much of your money is expended for. And possibly the wild squandering of your money for a foreign policy that makes the United States a satellite of Israel may not be related policies. Never before has the White House been occupied by a man about whom most Americans know very little. This is true, although Mr. Reagan, during all his adult life, has almost constantly been in the public limelight. As a lifeguard, a sports announcer, a Hollywood star, governor of California, and finally president of the United States. To illustrate this momentous lack of public knowledge about Mr. Reagan and his many unpublicized activities, which are not in the best interest of America or Americans, I should like to mention a couple of incidents which, at this writing, may not have been mentioned in the closed U.S. media. First of all, Mr. Reagan carried on a secret campaign last year urging her good Marxist friend Dr. Armin Hammer to secure a Nobel Peace Prize for her husband as some sort of leaving the White House present. According to her, it would be a fitting finale to the president's long career in and out of politics. And since a group of European Jews now make the selections for the Nobel Awards, she spoke with the right person. The Reagans have not done a lot for Mr. Hammer, such as allowing him to cut any deals he likes with the Soviets, no matter how much they harmed America. Now we can wait and see if Mr. Hammer will reciprocate by doing something for Mr. Reagan, the best friend a world Zionist ever had. And that's it for now, boys and girls. I may read the rest of this tomorrow if you don't go to sleep, but it's important that you know that none of these guys that become president are anything but hired guns, criminals, and part of an organized crime syndicate called Washington, D.C. And if you get off on these trips like they do, say, oh my God, this great white hope, this guy, he's going to be great. I've been looking at these guys for decades. They've all been rats, all been traitors, all been against the race, all have betrayed us. So once you know that, you know it. Don't keep repeating the same problem. Same mistakes. Some guy tells you in the primary all this good shit that you think sounds good, and before the ink's dry on the paper, once they're in power, there goes the troops. There they go. I'll see you tomorrow.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
How can I contain this anguish and this pain?